This episode is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm that gets that cookie-cutter thinking doesn't cut it in today's tech industry. Grant Thornton listens first, tailoring solutions to evolve with your business, whatever comes next. More at gt.com.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Monday, June 5th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Delivering vaccines in many countries around the world can be tricky. Things like insufficient cold storage can stand in the way of eradicating diseases like measles, which caused 128,000 deaths in 2021, according to the World Health Organization. But technology that delivers these vaccinations in patches could fix that. Our reporter Brian Gormley, who covers venture capital and healthcare for the WSJ Pro team, will join us to explain this tech and the startups making it. But before we get into the episode, we have a request. We want to hear from you. So if you're listening on Spotify, look out for our poll under the episode description, or send us an email to tnb@wsj.com to tell us what you want to hear more of in the show. Brief news headlines, in-depth reporter chats, deep dive miniseries, or maybe it's something else. All right, on to the episode. Call of Duty is arguably one of the most successful video game franchises ever. And it's at the center of the debate over whether Microsoft should be allowed to buy Call of Duty's owner, Activision Blizzard, for $75 billion. Regulators worry the deal could give Microsoft an unfair edge in the video gaming industry. The UK's Competition and Markets Authority mentioned Call of Duty 41 times in its decision to reject the deal in April. The US Federal Trade Commission cited the game 18 times in its complaint to quash the acquisition. And even though the European Union approved the tie-up last month, that came only after Microsoft pledged to allow competitors to stream Call of Duty and other Activision games over the cloud. Our tech reporter Sarah Needleman is with me to discuss what makes this gaming franchise so important. So Sarah, for people who haven't played Call of Duty, the players are set in a war scenario, but can you tell us how long the game has been around for and just what makes it so popular?
This franchise is two decades old. And what's made it popular is a combination of factors. For one, when it came out, that was just when online multiplayer gaming was starting to come into vogue. So it really came at the right time. And there weren't as many other shooters back then as there are today. And compared to the other shooters that were available back then, Call of Duty really had superior graphics and is one of those games that's easy to learn but hard to master. People really gravitated toward it quite quickly. And because it had that early mover advantage, you could say, it continued to snowball over time. And Activision Blizzard invests a large amount of money into the game. The company doesn't say exactly how much, but analysts estimate it's in the hundreds of millions of dollars that they put every year into this franchise.
Okay, so it is very popular, but it's still just one franchise. So why are regulators so fixated on it?
Regulators are concerned that Microsoft could potentially make Call of Duty exclusive to its own cloud gaming platform and locking out others from being able to provide it to players. And so the thinking is that consumers would gravitate toward Microsoft's cloud gaming service. With cloud gaming, it's pretty new, but what the technology does is allow people to play video games from just about any internet connected device with a screen. So essentially smart TVs, mobile phones, laptops. You don't have to plunk down hundreds of dollars on a video game console like the Xbox or PlayStation, nor do you have to spend a lot of money on a gaming PC.
What have Microsoft and Activision said about these concerns?
The company has said that the deal won't hurt competition and that they've committed to licensing Call of Duty games to rivals and to enabling people to stream current and future Activision titles, including Call of Duty, through the cloud gaming platform of their choice.
All right, that was our tech reporter, Sarah Needleman. Two of Twitter's top safety executives resigned last week. Ella Irwin stepped down as Twitter's head of trust and safety, becoming the second person to leave that post since Elon Musk bought the social media company in October. She declined to comment on the reason for her departure. A day later, AJ Brown, Twitter's head of brand safety and ad quality, also decided to leave the company, according to people familiar with the matter. Their departures create a big hole for Twitter's incoming CEO, Linda Yaccarino. Yaccarino has said that brand safety is a top priority for advertisers. Ads make up the bulk of Twitter's revenue. Twitter did not respond to a request for comment. And a California bill requiring tech companies to pay media outlets for news articles posted on their social media platforms cleared a major hurdle last week. But it still faces more challenges, including with the social media platforms which object to the new law. Our reporter Christine Myduk explains.
It's unclear how other tech firms will respond to this, but on Wednesday, Meta, the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, threatened to pull all news stories from its platforms if the bill's passed. A spokesman for Meta told us that that would mean users in California wouldn't be able to read, post, or share news articles on Instagram or their Facebook news feeds. Now that the bill has passed the state assembly, it'll head to the state senate next. The deadline to pass all bills in the California legislature is September 14th.
All right, in a minute, no more needles. At least that's the hope for companies delivering vaccinations via patches. We'll dive into how the tech works and why it's got investors excited to get rid of jabs when we come back.
This podcast is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm you share something with, listening. They take the time to understand you and your business so you get the best solution, not more noise. Start a conversation at gt.com.
Imagine a world where the next time you need to get a vaccination, a doctor doesn't have to take out a big needle. Instead, they could just pop a patch on your arm. A number of biotech startups are working to create that future. And while it could help eradicate diseases in places where vaccinations are hard to deliver, investors are betting on potential closer to home. With us now to discuss this is Brian Gormley, who covers venture capital and healthcare for the WSJ Pro team. Let's talk a little bit about this vaccination patch. How does the technology work?
These are patches that contain what they call microneedles. And the needles penetrate just under the skin and they release the vaccine. There are different types of microneedle patches that various types of companies are developing, but the basic concept is the same. And they say they do so with little or no pain.
Can you tell us a little bit about why these patches are necessary?
In wealthy nations such as the United States, there's not a problem of maintaining refrigeration of vaccines from the time they are distributed right up until the time they are injected. But in certain parts of the world, such as areas of sub-Saharan Africa, maintaining a proper cold chain of distribution all the way up to the time of injection can be challenging when there is limited refrigeration and electricity. And the vaccines that are formulated for delivery on the microneedle patches are stable at higher temperatures than the conventional vaccine that is injected into the arm.
Where does this technology stand at the moment?
The concept of microneedle patches has been in existence for probably about 20 years or so, but the current patches that are being tested now are fairly early stage clinical trials, and they will need larger phase clinical studies to validate their effectiveness before they are become more routinely used.
Are there specific challenges then of delivering vaccinations via patch as opposed to delivering them the traditional way?
The early clinical trials show that, at least for companies including Micron Biomedical, which is a startup in Atlanta, that the vaccination by the patch triggers a similar immune response as a traditional vaccine delivered by injection. However, that has to be validated in larger clinical trials to see if that benefit holds up when it's used more widely across a greater number of patients.
Can you tell us a little bit more about these startups that are developing the vaccination patches?
Two of the companies I was focusing on are Micron Biomedical and Vaxis. Both are applying their microneedle patch technology both to measles rubella vaccines that can be used in low and middle income countries, but also to other types of drugs and vaccines that could be applied in the United States and other high income countries. Seasonal influenza is one. COVID-19 vaccines are another possibility.
How do investors feel about the prospect of this technology?
Investors see the work that these companies are doing for measles and rubella as a validation of the technology and an opportunity to gain more experience using it. But from the pure investment side of the story, the real payoff for them is going to be if these companies are successful in delivering vaccines in the United States and other high-income countries. That's where the big payoff is going to be for them if it occurs.
Are there different things that investors are taking into consideration when they're putting money into these biomedical startups, ones that have to deal with regulatory approval and people's health, as opposed to maybe, you know, a new social media venture?
Absolutely. They have to factor in a wide range of technical, logistical, market, and medical issues before making an investment in these companies. They have to be convinced that these technologies will be able to deliver vaccines as effectively as a needle does, for example. They have to be convinced that there is a payoff in the end, enough demand from patients and healthcare providers, vaccine makers, drug companies for this technology. So it's quite a lot of analysis that goes into making an investment in companies that have this much technical development ahead of them and also medical scientific risk.
All right, that's WSJ reporter Brian Gormley. And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm that gets that cookie cutter thinking doesn't cut it in today's tech industry. Grant Thornton listens first, tailoring solutions to evolve with your business, whatever comes next. More at gt.com.